Good morning, everyone. Let me call the study session of Thursday, October 18th, 2007 to order. We are going to be conducting interviews this morning for applicants for the District 5 vacancy that we have. And we have four applicants that will be interviewed. And the process is going to be to give the applicants a three-minute period to have an opening statement. Then each of us will have a question, and you try to limit your response to no more than 3 minutes. There should be a timer up there in front, and you can watch the timer as it clicks down, and then we're going to do a three-minute close also. It's easier for us to keep it in 3 minutes than to reprogram all of our clocks and the reset buttons. So that was how we'll do it. We have Terry Benelli, Daryl Truitt, Phil Austin, and John Perkinson will be the ones that we will interview this morning. And the order was basically selected by how they responded back when we notified the candidates that they had made the final cut from the 12 that we originally had submittals from to fill this vacancy. So, Terry, you're the first one up. Please, you have 3 minutes for an introduction.
Good morning, Mayor Hocker and Vice Mayor Walpers, Councilman Summers, Whalen, and Jones. Mayor, I appreciate you and the council selecting me for the opportunity to sit in front of you today. I'm pleased that my submittal stood out from the other qualified applicants for the open District 5 council seat. Completing the application was a challenge in that I had to convey my strong desire to continue serving the community in this important role using a limited amount of words. The fact that I'm here speaking with you today is an honor. As an active member of the community, I've been asked on numerous occasions by a variety of community leaders if my goal was to run for city council. My answer was always no. When considering the question, the answer of no was always based on my desire not to involve my family and career in a political campaign. The unique opportunity to serve Mesa on a city council without the necessity of running for the seat is obviously very appealing to me. As my history in Mesa demonstrates, I have for 23 years consciously sought out experiences within the community to learn about my neighbors and educate myself about the city of Mesa. Through this experience, my skills to act as a liaison between the public and government have surfaced. To effectively participate in the community, open lines of communication must exist. By helping people and entities understand differing perspectives, acceptance of resolutions typically follow. My position on City Council, under an appointment by this panel, is an experience that clearly enhances and utilizes my knowledge base. My husband and I chose Mesa, Arizona as our home, the place we raise our two children, the place where I've utilized my entrepreneurial spirit to build a successful home-based community management business. The hands-on knowledge of business has prepared me to serve a key role as a Department of the Treasury program to assist the region as a nonprofit. We're structured to enhance economic development through job growth via startup expansion of nonprofit business. Okay, enough about myself now. I'm going to talk about the city. Mesa has amazing opportunities that are often overlooked. Our excellent education system, Mesa Public Schools, EVIT, MCC, ESU Polytechnic, and AT Still. Our strong healthcare infrastructure, a robust business climate, open space, a major asset in District 5, and the ability of the recently hired new leaders in our city staff. They have brought experienced and unique perspectives to move us towards sustainability. Economic development is Mesa's future. The voters sent this message to the city when the property tax was voted down. Fortunately, Mesa's leadership had the foresight to develop a general plan through 2025. As a member of this council, I will work to protect the plan, especially in our economic activity areas during the final stages of build-out. One second left.
Take a breather and think about this.
Now I have time to breathe.
Got it in within 2 seconds, sir. I'm going to alternate back and forth. I'll start here kind of in the middle, and then we'll ask the questions, and then we'll start from the outside edge so everyone's not asking questions in the same order from the council. So let me start on the first one.
Okay.
In your application, you indicated that you wanted to, quote, I believe it was protect Falcon Field and Williams as regional commerce centers.
And
my question to you is, if we are going to do that, and the citizens continually reject any type of a property tax. Commerce centers do not typically, as far as job centers, if that's what you're referring to, generate sales tax. So how do you balance the sales tax generation with a commerce center that doesn't generate it, generates jobs but doesn't generate sales tax?
Mayor, I understand that the electorate has decided that Mesa would be run on a sales tax basis. And I don't know that I've investigated fully the ramifications of Williams and Falcon Field just being strictly economic activity areas. I do believe that they would be self-sufficient with the amount of money that they would generate through sales tax, even though the base of what their activity is would be jobs. I guess it's something that I would have to investigate further.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Terry. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
During the next few months, during the time that whoever assumes District 5 seat is on the council, this council will be voting to put general obligation bonds on the ballot.
Yes.
There will be a decision made at that point in time about what we're going to say to the electorate when they are voting on those general obligation bonds. Could you talk for a minute about your feelings about bonding, about financing the city, and about what mechanisms you would use to repay those bonds if we issue general obligation bonds?
I sure can. Claudia, that's something I've thought about. I understand that a typical use for bonds is for public safety infrastructure, or actually what I would call capital improvement requirements. Our city has included the caveat in past bond initiatives to use a secondary property tax as a repayment alternative. And I think the voters have agreed to fund these projects through those terms. I believe the necessary improvements for responsible growth cannot be financed any longer through the general fund. I would only vote to approve a bond initiative that has a secondary property tax attached as a way of repayment.
Okay, Mike?
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for coming. There's a lot of controversy in our community and across the country in reference to an immigration policy for cities, especially police departments. Knowing that that a great amount of our populace wants the local police department to become involved in immigration enforcement, and that the city council may be setting a policy role for our police department, what is your feeling in reference to what role the police department should take in immigration enforcement?
Councilman Whalen, the illegal immigration issue is a very complex issue. And although I sit on the Human Relations Advisory Board, it's not something that we have chosen to investigate. I believe that I would need to become more familiar with the federal, state, and county roles in government and public safety issues to learn to be comfortable with the city setting a policy on how we're going to interact with those other agencies, because I think it's a multi-level, complex issue.
Kind of walked around that as well as many folks do, but thank you for thinking about it.
Scott?
I'd like to comment. Hi, Terry. Good to see you again.
Good morning.
I'm going to just give you another opportunity for that 3 minutes, I think. I'm not going to ask you anything specific other than to say this. There are two possibilities here, and I'm not going to tag you down. Either you're going to run for election for your own term, well, I guess it would be half a term, or you're not. So not necessarily going for a direct answer on that. Looking at the next 7 months, it's a pretty short time frame. Mm-hmm. So if you only go for 7 months, what do you hope to accomplish in that 7 months? What are your objectives for the very short term? If you do seek re-election, assuming that you are elected, what would be your objections for the remainder of the two-year term, the more long-term goals?
Okay, I'm not sure I understand the objection part.
Objective. Objective.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Apparently I'm coming down with a cold and the words aren't coming out fluidly as they should.
Councilman Summers, I look at this eight-month opportunity as just that, an opportunity to serve District 5 and to represent them. I believe that I can prove in 8 months that I would be a good council person for District 5. I plan on being in District 5 for some time, and I see this as kind of a stepping stone to prove to the public that I can do the job that I say that I can do, and not to initially run for the remainder of the two-year term, but possibly in the future. I'm sure in 8 months I'm going to learn a lot about things that I need to learn a lot about. So I would, my thought at this point, I would not forget considering, you know, a run for the two-year term, just because I like to keep my options open. But at this point, I'm not really leaning towards that way. My priorities as council for the next 8 months would be to protect the, or make sure that policies are protecting our economic activity areas, to look at the budget and help to make recommendations to the person that would get elected to that seat or the person that continues on for the budget. You know, I know that there's budget constraints, and I think we need some fiscal responsibility and just help make some tough decisions about services that we provide in the city and services that we continue not to. And I know there's a lot of public input, you know, I want, and sometimes you have to make a hard decision and just say no, and I'm capable of doing that. The other priority I would have is that we continue the quality development that's happening in District 5 that we've seen in the Northeast Corridor recently.
Councilmember Jones.
Good morning, Terry.
Good morning.
So far, much of what has been mentioned has to do with finances, and for a very obvious reason. A lot of what we have to do is juggle with what resources we have available and make some very tough decisions.
Yes.
Now, you in your previous statement, you said you understand that the electorate decided that they didn't want a property tax, so we're going to deal with the sales tax. And right now, we're in a very good position as far as sales tax, because they're doing much better than when I started 5 years ago, considerably better. But in the event that we do have a downturn and we have to make some tough decisions, so I just want to get your feel on how you understand the financial picture and the ramifications of decisions that are made. Ms. Chair, a little more.
Councilman Jones, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I've run a successful business. Part of my job with the program in the Department of the Treasury is to assess businesses, startups, and expansions, look at business plans, see where they're generating their revenue, see where there might be some pitfalls. And typically there's a pro forma involved where you're going to be in the next 3 years, and there are alternatives to raising capital for your business, and I kind of look at the city the same way. I mean, I think that it's a difficult situation to be basically run on, it's like you're being paid by commission with no base salary. And it's tough to budget your money, and it's tough to run a business with that premise. But that's what we're charged with doing. And I have no problem, as a community manager, oftentimes I get phone calls that say, you know, I want this or I want that, and it's just no, and let me help you through this process. What do you think is more important, to staff our police and fire and have decent roads, or, you know, maybe a green retention basin or whatever the issue may be?
Thank you.
Yes.
Terry, this is your opportunity for a three-minute wrap-up.
And
if you want to expand on any questions asked or do a statement, you're free, however you decide to use the time.
Okay. My goal has always been to serve this community effectively. My proven track record of public and private service began in 1986 with my role as a board member of both the Master and Sub Association in my neighborhood. I expanded my service to the Mesa community as area leader of the Building a Healthier Mesa initiative, which began in 1993. The initiative created collaborations, which I think are important. They were among nonprofit agencies, faith communities, educational, business, and government organizations, and they assisted neighborhoods in achieving goals. This experience led me to learn more about the services that our nonprofit community provides for Mesa. I served as a Mesa United Way Building Investment Manager to learn more about that process. In the year of 2000, I was selected to participate in Mesa Leadership Training and Development Program. I thought I was fairly knowledgeable about Mesa, the issues and the opportunities, and then I spent a year with LTD, and it really opened my eyes. The program of the Chamber of Commerce was so valuable to me that I decided to run to serve on the Volunteer Alumni Board of Directors. I served two terms, with one of the years as chairperson, and I was also a member of the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors at that time. The community educational experiences have been priceless, and I believe the eight-month appointment to the City Council will also be priceless and from an educational standpoint. I look forward to representing the people of District 5 in official capacity. I appreciate your consideration and the support and encouragement I received from community members during this process. I'm confident that in the next 8 months, I will prove to the District 5 residents that a great choice has been made for them by you.
All right, thank you, Jerry. The next applicant is Daryl Truitt.
Good morning.
The same sequencing. I have 3 minutes for opening remarks, and then I'll start over with Councilmember Summers to start asking questions.
So. Thank you. Well, Mayor Hawker, Vice Mayor Walters, and members of the council, I'd like to just thank you for the opportunity and the invitation to be here today. I think you have a tough task before you. You've got some excellent candidates here, and I think some of the key questions might be what are your qualifications, and how do you get through that learning curve and get going really quickly. So I thought I would just briefly summarize some of my background and experience and maybe how that's applicable. As you know, I'm a civil engineer, I'm a land surveyor, I've done a lot of planning in my life, and so I think I have an excellent background in those types of matters, in planning and zoning matters, and I've probably entitled hundreds of properties in the past before various boards and communities. I think that'll be very valuable as we consider zoning cases, planning cases, general plan amendments, zoning code amendments, and things like that. I've also got a strong background in design review. I've been serving on the Town of Gilbert Design Review Board for many years and have done hundreds and hundreds of cases in that matter. I think economic development is vital to the City of Mesa for its health and its future and for the well-being of the community. I have a strong development background, again, having worked for clients and entitled and developed plans for literally hundreds and hundreds of projects, and I know what it takes to move projects through the city development process. I used to be a City of Mesa employee in the engineering department, so I used to review plans, so I know that side of it, but I also know the development side of it and some of the frustrations that sometimes come along with it. City is a growing city, and so you're going through growing pains in infrastructure and things like that. And I have a strong infrastructure background. I've designed water lines and sewer lines and parks and roadways and different things like that. And so I think I really understand that extremely well. That includes planning those projects, designing those projects, being project manager, and being construction manager for many types of projects like that. I have significant public meeting experience. I've been fortunate to be the chairman of the Design Review Board in Gilbert for 22 years, and so literally done hundreds and hundreds of public meetings, as well as neighborhood meetings and involving myself with public involvement programs. Strong business background, financial statements, those kinds of things. I've been an operations manager for an engineering company for 28 years, continuous 28 years. And a strong commitment to serve. You know, I've basically been on a board, a city board, for the past 25 years here in Mesa and then later in the town of Gilbert. And I really enjoy that and like that that involvement. I think my time's out, so I'll turn it over to you for questions.
Mr. Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. Hello, Daryl. Unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to meet until just now, but I've been thumbing through your application. I have to tell you, it's pretty impressive. From my standpoint, what I was looking at is the amount of growth that needs to occur in District 5, but also in my district, and you have a lot of planning, involvement, project construction, improvements, sewer and water lines, highways. It's quite an interesting resume you bring forward, very, very much an engineer's resume. I like that.
That is it.
There's another aspect, though, to the City Council. It's a little different. There's the engineering side. How we have to grow. We have to zone. New buildings going up, but there's also a personal touch to this, which is every time we rezone or every time we add a new project, there's there's a balance of two sides between people who are already there and properties that are vacant and seek to build. And that takes a lot of the personal touch. So I guess the question is, how do you balance that? First of all, what kind of experience do you have dealing with that personal touch and reaching out into the community and asking and trying to resolve problems between developers, say, and neighbors? And how do you balance the rights, the ownership rights, between those who are there and those who own property that's trying to be developed?
Well, thank you. You know, I've done that in probably two roles. One is as a consultant, and we've gone to a lot of neighborhood meetings. And I think when you deal with the public, you need to go through a process. You need to relate to their context and what they may understand and what they may not understand. So when we're dealing with the public, we're usually trying to first educate them about what's going on and maybe what the key issues are and inform them of the specifics of that project. And then I think you get them involved and get meaningful input. Balancing those things between those development property rights or private property rights that they hold and the rights of the adjacent property owners is always a delicate issue. Again, serving as the chairman of the Town of Gilbert Design Review Board for the past 22 years, I've probably done this on hundreds and hundreds of cases. And again, you have to educate them. We have a lot of people that come to the DR board and say, you know, that they don't want an office building built there. And we have to explain to them that that's land use, and we're doing design review, and we're talking about elevations and things like that. But you listen closely, and you talk about what are the impacts of the development on their community? What are the mitigation measures that might be considered? You might look at setbacks. You might look at landscape buffers. You might look at different types of design features, their circulation plan, and how that it would impact the neighbors. For example, I know that there's a Lascendas 51-acre project out in Northeast Mason that's a little bit contentious right now, and I think a lot of it has to do with, well, what are the impacts on me in the neighborhood, and what kind of traffic impacts are there? And you're going to drive out here on this road that I drive every day. And so I think I'm quite experienced at those kinds of things and those kinds of questions. And I believe, for example, that role that I've served in, I always look at the role as the chairman, as the one who tries to build consensus and involve the applicant with their rights, the staff with their information, and the citizens as they come before us. In 22 years, I think we've had maybe three cases appealed to the city council, and I think that's the record, and that's what I stand on, is that we try to get it resolved and get it approved and go forward.
Vice Mayor?
Thank you. I contemplated whether somebody was going to have an advantage going first versus going last and hearing all the questions and if I should change up my questions, but decided, no, this question's important enough. I just want to hear how you feel about it. So be warned, gentlemen who are sitting back there, this is the question you're getting from me. In the next couple of months, we're going to be looking at sending general obligation bonds to the ballot. I'd like to know how you feel about financing general obligation bonds for the City of Mesa, and if you'd speak for a moment about the City of Mesa finances and how you view financial decisions as a city in general. Thank you. Oh, by the way, good to see you this morning.
Thank you. In terms of bonding, I understand it's a necessary means that the city uses. It's not the way I run my life, so I'm going to have to kind of adapt to it and get more comfortable with it, quite frankly. General obligation bonds don't have a revenue source. They don't have a revenue stream like water fees and sewer fees and those kinds of things. So I think they're primarily paid for out of the general funds of the city, which is primarily sales tax, and that's been the city's model forever. It was the city's model when I worked here many, many years ago. The city's got, I think, great challenges because, you know, we used to be the sales engine for the East Valley, and then our neighbors started building malls and shopping centers and things, and they quit coming and bringing their sales tax dollars to the city. I would agree that I think we need revenue streams, identifiable revenue streams, and I think the stable revenue streams. And I was a property tax advocate, and and I'm a secondary property tax advocate, and I think that's the way I would view it. I'd like to see more definition between expenditures and revenue streams and what things are appropriate for the use of sales tax and what things are more appropriate for the use of the secondary taxes that might be used.
In your application, you've mentioned, and also here today, you've mentioned the town of Gilbert, the design review board that you served on for a number of years. What information have you learned there that would be transferable and useful for the Mesa City Council and the City of Mesa?
I'd say the message that we're from the government and we're here to help you doesn't always sell. And you need to be sensitive to their concerns. People are emotional at times about things that are directly impacting them. And I think you need to treat people with respect and courtesy and understand that they may not be looking at it with the most objective eyes that you and I should do in our stewardship in a public role. Again, I kind of went through that a little bit, but we do also in my business, besides the design review board, we do a lot of public meetings for public improvement projects. Monday night I was up in Kinlichi on the Navajo Nation presenting a 14-mile transportation project, and they were asking, you know, when are you going to build it? And you have to educate them of what the processes are and inform them and those types of things. We had a case the other evening at the DR board where a lady came and she just couldn't get past the fact that this building was 25 foot or 30 foot tall and it had a roof on it, and people would be up on the roof and looking into her backyard, you know. And so you just have to be sensitive to those issues, but you try to need to get back to you know, what you're doing that evening. So I think that's it. I think you treat them with respect, and then you try to educate them and inform them and then involve them and get meaningful input and then see what can we do to maybe help you, but at the same time respect the processes and the rights of the development that has certain rights to do things.
Mike?
Thank you. Morning, Darrell.
Good morning.
Emotional issues. You heard my question earlier. I'm not asking you to solve the immigration issue for the United States. My question is specifically, what role should the Mesa Police Department take in immigration enforcement that you would support as a policymaker for the city?
That's a great question, and I don't like it. I suppose, because it's a tough question. I really think that you need to look at, with any organization, what's their mission. And I think that the City of Mesa Police Department's mission should be to protect the citizens of the City of Mesa and the health and safety and the welfare of the citizens of the City of Mesa. So as it is impacted by illegal immigration, I think we should get involved, specifically related to things like crime and things like that. So I think we should be involved. I think if you arrest somebody, if they're an illegal immigrant, then you do that. But should we be out there driving around looking for illegal immigrants? I don't think so. I think it would detract from the core mission of the City of Mesa Police Department. So I'm not going to beat around the bush. I think I feel pretty strongly about those things. And I think if we do that, if we understand that there are laws involved in immigration, and if people are breaking the laws and you arrest them, it's kind of like if you arrest somebody on a traffic stop and then you find out that you start suspecting that they have drugs or other illegal activities going on, you pursue those things. But you don't go around stopping everybody to see if they've got illegal drugs in their cars. I kind of feel the same thing about immigration.
Thank you. I appreciate your answer.
Morning, Darrell. I think Claudia and I are thinking a lot on the same lines, because financial is a huge part for me as far as the future of our city. And you already answered some of the questions for the long term. I'll throw a different angle at it. How do you feel about financial decisions that have been made in the last 5 years and what has taken place?
You know, I was asked and did serve on a City of Mesa committee regarding transportation about 3 years ago. It was a committee that was supposed to look into finances related to transportation and maybe make a recommendation to the council on whether or not there should be a dedicated sales tax or some other revenue stream to help address the transportation needs. I think we did recommend the city consider a dedicated sales tax towards transportation needs, and I think the city council elected to not do that. I would have elected to do that personally. I'd like to see dedicated financial resources and streams of revenue for that. When we were doing that and looking at the finances related to transportation, it was a little distressing to me to look at the conditions of the finances and particularly related to transportation, because that's what we were discussing. The city has HERF revenues that they get, and I thought, well, we've got HERF revenues, you know, and things like that, and then I figured out that those HERF revenues basically were pretty well committed to retiring past bonds and or maybe taking care of about half our maintenance requirements for the city. And there really wasn't any HERF revenue stream available for capital improvement programs. It was really dedicated to those things. At least that's the way it appeared as we went through that. So I guess I'd like to look much more forward and, again, identify revenue sources that are stable revenue sources. Look at the big picture. The city has Prop 400 monies available to them for a lot of transportation projects. I think Mayor Harker and the council did a great job in that arm wrestle with the city of Phoenix about, okay, this is what you want, this is what we want out of the Prop 400 monies. But that comes with obligations for city shares, and I think you have a tough time before you to use to get those city shares. Now, one of the things you can use for credits for those city shares is developer participation. So I think we need to look strongly at partnerships and developer participation to generate a lot of those city shares, and including right-of-way dedications. Right-of-way dedications are eligible expenses. So I think we need to start thinking outside the box and get our staff more proactively involved in different ways to solve the problems, because the box is getting very restrictive.
It's very enlightening to find out how many funds are not available.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it was enlightening. Thank you.
Okay. That's our questions. We give you the opportunity for a wrap up if you'd like.
Well, I think that you should be interested in why do I want to serve on the city council. And I think I try to do that in my application. I've been fortunate enough to live in the city of Mesa since 1971, other than a three-year mission down to the city of Tucson on an employment opportunity. I think I've really benefited from living in the city of Mesa all those times. Fortunate enough to raise our children here and educate our children here and, you know, participate in its parks programs. Candidate Perkinson and I have played on a number of softball teams together and enjoyed the benefits of living in the city of Mesa. I'm at a point in my career where I guess I have this strong desire to continue serving and serving more than I've served in the past. So I've actually looked for those opportunities, not only in community service but in church service. Right now in my career, I've got to a time where I can work less and serve more, and that's what I desire to do. I think it's a great opportunity to do that, to give back to the city of Mesa for all the benefits that I've received over the past 30 years or so, the 33 years that I've lived here. And that's my reasons.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time and submitting an application. And
thank you.
Pleasure to hear. The next one up is Phil Austin. And Kyle, you'll start the question on this one. Right. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Mayor.
Same sequence of events. So you have a three-minute opening.
Okay. Thank you so much, the Mayor and the Council, for the opportunity to present regarding my application for this position in District 5. My purpose in this presentation is twofold. One, to convince you that I am the best candidate for District 5 based upon what I believe are the requirements, that is, of commitment, leadership, and vision. And two, to address an issue that any of you may have that disprove that I am not of a particular constituency or interest, that I would serve and have served in the interest of the whole community of Mesa. In regard to my commitment, I think my application reflects 40 years of commitment since high school, because I was instilled with the admonition from my parents that to those who are endowed, much is expected. So I've sought both volunteer and professional opportunities to serve. My resume reflects those 40 years of involvement in such diverse organizations as scholarship raising, Boy Scouts, advocacy on behalf of the less fortunate, and civic engagement, and public health delivery. Those all, I think, reflect a record of public service that qualify me in the area of commitment. But commitment's not enough. The successful candidate's got to demonstrate leadership to assist Mesa and this council to overcome the challenges we face, challenges for greater demands on public safety to enhance the quality of life and to further our economic development in light of the current fiscal restraints we have. My background in leadership positions more than qualify me for that role. Some examples of that is as Assistant Attorney General for the state, I was requested to bring together groups representing the disabled and the aged to work with the chambers of commerce and other statewide business organizations to come up with legislation to protect the aged and the disabled from employment and housing discrimination. That was done to the benefit of both of all concerned. I was also asked to implement a program to address the issue of mounting backlog of cases by state agencies in light of state budget restraints. And I developed a program where we recruited and trained over 400 volunteers throughout the state to handle court-referred cases, agency complaints, and save the state thousands of dollars, resolve thousands of complaints, and resulted in satisfactory results to all involved. Lately, I was involved in the development of the Small Business Center here locally that helps small businesses avoid bankruptcy and improve. So these are examples of how my leadership has developed collaboration between the private and public sector to address difficult challenges. But as important as commitment and leadership is, the candidate must have a vision, because without a vision, those attributes are minimized. Mesa is a dynamic community. District 5 is a growing and dynamic community, and the candidate must have a vision for taking Mesa and the district to its place of greatness that it deserves by using all our resources, economic resources in the economic engines we have, but our primary resource is the people, and to galvanize the people to address the issues we have and to provide suggestions for resolution. Time is up. We'll continue with my vision in response to the questions and answer and during the summation.
All right. Councilmember Jones.
Good morning, Phil.
Hello there, Kyle.
Knowing what Claudia is going to ask already, I'll pretty much go back to what I asked on the last round, was give me your feel on your sense on financial decisions and things that have been done in the last 5 years in that regard.
Well, I think it's obvious Mesa faces budget restrictions, and at the same time the people have spoken, they're not going to accept a property tax. But that's not going to deter us from moving to be great. I was just at the Arizona Biomedical Collaborative in Phoenix, where they are working on developing cures for Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. Legislation for that was passed by the legislature in 2002, when the legislature faced a $2 billion deficit. Yet they moved ahead and said, we're going to do this and find a way to do it. Mesa's got to do that. We have to have leadership to do that. Several steps we need to do that. One is to engage the community, all stakeholders, residents, businesses, new businesses, old businesses alike, to work on that. Second is to support our city manager and our new economic development director, Bill Jimliak, easy for me to say. And the ideas he has for economic development, developing an economic development action team to assist the developing developers in the challenging permit process. We've got to convince businesses to stay and come to Mesa. But in the short term, we need to pass the bond, the capital improvement bond. We need to explore other ideas, for example, development districts, establishing a development districts where developers would be assessed for infrastructure improvements and the like. We need to look at the effect of home rule. By having home rule, we can eliminate some of the caps on expenditures. That avenue has to be explored. The possible sale of our utilities system, to see whether that's going to benefit and open up avenues of streams of flow. And the innovative use of federal funds and other funding sources. We need to do that, but basically we also need to renew the public's confidence. You know, that limits the city from acting anything over $1.5 million, $1.5 million, to taking steps to energize our community with economic developments. We lost the stadium, we lost opportunities elsewhere because of that lack of trust. We've got to regenerate that trust in the community, in our council, and in our city municipal officers.
Councilmember Whalen.
Morning, Phil.
Hello, Mike.
In reference to immigration policy of the Mesa Police Department, what should the role of the Mesa PD be? And as a follow-up to that, if you're familiar with the 287G program, do you think that's something that would benefit the Mesa Police Department in a jailing situation?
Great. As indicated before, I think it's important to both realize the mission of the police department as well as the issue. There's been much made about the effects of immigration on crime, and as our Chief Gascon indicated in his article last Sunday, much of those concerns are unfounded. Nevertheless, I think that the police department has a role. Of course, I'm a student of history, and the Constitution said that for good reason, says that role should be in the federal government. But the reality is the cities are affected. Mesa is affected. It's affected in our streets. It's affected in our neighborhoods. And to an extent that it is affected by in the area of criminal enforcement, the local department should work with ICE, the federal government, when arrestees are notified to be here illegally, to help ICE and supplement their attempts to arrest those involved in drug smuggling, human smuggling, and other major crimes. And in regard to the 287G program, I think limited at the jail, implementation of a 287G program at the jail, where we have identified criminals who were brought to the jail on that time in processing to allow deputized at that basis at the jail is I think, a valid approach. But I think we have to avoid the alienation of our communities. Law enforcement will tell you that if certain communities do not report crime, then the crime goes unaddressed. If our communities are fearful of reporting to the police department major crimes that affect not only them but others, then we all lose.
Thank you.
Phil, I want to do a little follow-up on Mike's question, and I'm very pleased to hear that you've now that you're in favor of having the officers cross-trained for the jailing services at Mesa Police Department. We haven't quite come to that conclusion as a council yet, but hopefully that'll be on an agenda and we can get there.
Can I clarify that as opposed to, again, using that for identifying on the street?
Well, and that's where I'm leading my question to. In your goals and projected accomplishments sheet, you list 6 items that you want to do in your district. You also indicate that you want to have a community group meeting with community leaders. And my question is, if your community leaders in your district say that they want the 287G program expanded to some field officers, so traffic enforcement could also, on probable suspicion, follow up with immigration-related questions like DPS does, I've heard you state before that you're opposed to that, but if your district is overwhelmingly in support of that after you've had your community's forums, what would be your response?
My response would be we all work within limitations. One of the limitations is the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution does provide a mechanism for not only arrest and identification and arrest of people here who are here illegally, but other criminals. There are many criminals that we could catch by stopping everyone we see and checking them out to see whether they have drugs or weapons or the like. Our laws don't permit that because we have priorities in regard to what constitutes a free society. So in that regard, if I'm sure there is sentiment for that, my reason for objecting to a 287 program to identify people who are not here legally on the street is because of several of the issues brought before this council, the limitation on the police department's resources to do such things, and the negative effects it would have on the community. I was involved in the situation in Chandler 10 years ago where children walking the street were stopped and asked for their papers by Chandler Police Department. They thought they were talking about test scores, school test scores. This type of hunting down of people, I think, upon reflection and discussion with our constituents, I think they will soon understand that the proper role is to work with the federal enforcement agencies to do their job better and supplement them where we can.
And my question was whether you'd support the will of the majority in your district, if that was the determination or not. And I think I'm hearing you say you would not.
I would not. I would first discuss that with them and try to educate them, as I think our role, the leader, is. Okay. And then if that was their decision, I would respectfully disagree.
Okay. Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Good morning, Phil.
Hello, Claudia.
I'm assuming the constituency you thought people might think you were representing was attorneys. No attorney jokes this morning. Glad to have you here.
I got a bug.
He's up next. He gets the jokes.
Afterwards, I'd love to hear it afterwards.
You heard my question before. We have general obligation bonds that we need to pass because we have needs in our public safety and transportation areas. Daryl talked about the needs to match the Prop 400 money and work on street expansion issues. And my question is, when you look at the city's finances, when you look at putting those on the ballot, how would you suggest that the citizens would repay those? And if you just reflect a little bit on the finances of the city in general. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Again, I have addressed that. I think the long-term issue is, again, the council, along with the supporting the staff, economic development staff, planning and zoning staff, various staffs under Chris Brady's direction, in working with the people for long-term solutions, working with developers, again, as noted before, as I noted too, that you can, I think there is opportunity to develop development districts to assess developers for infrastructure costs and the like. But in regard to the bonds, I think the secondary sales tax, developing that, using that as a revenue source, and dedicated secondary taxes, there are manners of which you can approach that. But there are other streams, revenue streams, that we just have to look to and explore, from federal to other streams of income. For example, again, I mentioned perhaps looking at the at developing and adopting home rule and limiting our limits on eliminating our limits on expenditures and the like. Those type of efforts, I think we have to explore, and again, I intend to do that with the staff and people who know more than I about the budget.
May I follow up with that, Mayor?
Sure.
We're currently under home rule. We have to reauthorize that every 4 years, and we also currently have impact fees in the city of Mesa. When you are looking at development districts, and that's the second time I heard you mention that, and fees that go along with that, are you suggesting additional fees in addition to the existing impact fees that new development pays in Mesa?
I think, again, I'd look at that and see whether, again, they are always under the impact fees responsible for the infrastructure improvements, access to them, and the like, and see if how we can enhance that, enhance their contributions by going beyond the impact fee, current impact fee structure.
Thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Good morning, Phil.
Hello there, Scott.
Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Glad
to be here.
under your goals and projected accomplishments, number two, the provision of an attractive yet sensible method to incorporate unincorporated areas. I'm sure you are well aware that there is a great deal of developed area in Maricopa County that lies within the general boundaries of your district, and slowly that has been started to incorporate within the city limits of Mesa. But particularly in one of our subcommittees, our infrastructure subcommittee, we've had some dealings with some folks who are out there, particularly those who don't necessarily want to annex into the city but want a provision of services. It usually deals with water. Part of my question is going to be, what is your opinion on the provision of services, any services, but water included, to those who lie outside the city limits? A second part of this question is going to have to do with folks that do want to annex. A new policy says if you want water, you annex into the city. We change our annexation policies. However, when these areas in the county were developed, they were developed to county standards. And I say that as if the county actually had a standard at the time. It's usually dirt roads and a house on a lot. Okay, I'm in trouble for that one. I'm getting a phone call. But what this means to the city is that when we annex, there's a lot of infrastructure that has to be developed, say roadways, sidewalks, those types of things have to be brought in, and we're going to have to pay for that. What we're looking at is assessing fees, and sometimes those fees can be quite a bit of money, up to $10,000, depending on how large the lot is. We get a lot of complaints about that. What are your thoughts about assessing those fees on those property owners coming into the city, as opposed to bonding that or having the city take that out of the general fund and build that infrastructure with existing revenue?
Well, thank you for that question, Councilman Summers. Annexation is a great concern in District 5 as it is in District 6. We are, of course, limited by constitutional and statutory limitations. But I think the city, to avoid some of the issues that perhaps Gilbert has been facing with, you know, the kind of the catch-22 provision of services for fire and the like, we have to now engage residents in the unincorporated area in a really detailed and focused discussion about annexation regarding the costs, zoning implication, cone changes, and the like. That is, again, part, it has been mentioned before by other applicants who have been involved in problem solving this kind. It's that type of interaction that's necessary. The city cannot get away by dealing by fiat with these individuals. So those, we got to develop strategies that identify what the basis for resistance are, and if it's cost and assessment of fees, we need to look at strategies to help the individual landowners to address those fees. It would be my preference in regard to financing, arranging to facilitate with the private sector funding proposals or programs to help minimize the impact on such fees that I think are going to be necessary. But again, what has to occur is to engage those either individually or as a group, do it now in anticipation of the events where we're at the point where, we can only provide fire services to your house if somebody's in danger of death or major destruction. You need to avoid that by engaging them. And again, I think a free structure is reasonable, but I think there are ways to working with them to structure it in a way. Reassessment is reasonable in a way to structure it so that the impact is minimal to minimize the impact on the residents and to encourage them and to convince them of the advantages of annexation, what they get out of it, how it's going to affect their property values, their families, and the like, and make the fees worthwhile.
Okay. Right. Mr. Austin, you have a 3-minute summation, if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Victor Hugo said that all the armies in the world are not as powerful as an idea whose time has come. This is the time for Mesa to take its place among the great cities of the world and the nation. But it can only come about of this council and engenders the trust and confidence of its stakeholders, the residents, business people, churches, developers, all aspects of the community. And I think galvanizes them to join with our city staff, our fine city staff, to stand and accept the challenges and develop ways to address those challenges. I'm heartened by the Gateway Atropolis Plan discussions going on as a result of people, stakeholders coming together, looking at how we can enhance this area of our city to make it a first-class city. I ask the council to consider my attributes of commitment, leadership, and vision, and to, based upon that commitment, and especially my vision of moving our citizenry to work together to make Mesa the city it should be, to appoint me to this position. And let me serve with you and present and future councils to make Mesa great. You know, paraphrase Bobby Kennedy when he said, some people see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they should be and ask why not. Why don't we? Why not have a great city? Why not have our city, our citizens have more trust and confidence in this council and our cities to make decisions for them that they can accept and work with? I ask your approval of my application for the District 5 City Council position. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, I've got the first three. Should we start back in the middle like we did? I'll start the first question.
Mike hasn't started yet.
Well, neither of you.
Oh. But I think Mike has
started. Okay, sounds like you got Mike.
Don't wrestle.
All right. Next up is John Perkinson. Morning, John.
Good morning.
We'll same format. You have 3 minutes for an opening, and then we'll ask him some questions.
There for a minute, I thought maybe you were changing the thing, and you were going to just stop at the three like you'd originally talked about.
No. No such luck.
Well, good morning to all of you. It's good to see you this morning. I also, along with the three great candidates previous to me, am honored to have been asked to fill this seat, no matter how short-term it might be. I think, as you can see from my brief application, I'm a native of Mesa, almost born. I was born in California, but grew up here my entire life, attended all the Mesa public schools. Graduated from Westwood, moved back after some collegiate time, and have been privileged, and I'm grateful for that in hindsight, to have raised our five children here, and they've all attended Mesa Public Schools. And I'm passionate about Mesa. I think my record stands on its own relative to that. I socialize and volunteer and develop, and I'm active in all kinds of different things all over the state, but there's nowhere like Mesa. And I love it dearly, and I believe that it is already strong. I don't share the opinions that it is as on its deathbed as some might like to portray. I respect all of you, and I'm grateful to all of you for all of your leadership over the years. We're always moving forward, and it can always get better. And change is always good. It sometimes may be hard, but it's good. And I look forward to a lot of great opportunities in Mesa. We are located well. It sounds like a real estate person, location, 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 but we are. We have an incredible location as it relates to this entire valley. As the freeway systems continue to complete and come to that completion phase, I believe our location even gets better. But with location, 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 good judgments and good decisions need to be made moving forward. And I think we have a lot of those in front of us. You're working on one over at Wave Yard, working on another one out at Williams Gateway, working on Falcon Field, we're working on downtown. All of those are very, very important location decisions, and those ultimately will impact finance, they'll impact quality of life, they'll impact all the reasons that I've loved Mesa for 48 years and all the reasons I plan on loving Mesa for 54 more years. So with that, I turn that over to questions, and again, thank you for the opportunity and compliment the three who have gone before me. I feel like there's been three home runs instead of three singles or doubles since I'm clean up here. So I won't quote Manny Ramirez this morning, though.
So. Councilmember Whalen.
Thank you.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
My question is, what should the Mesa Police Department's role be in immigration enforcement, in your opinion?
I think that's a very difficult question. I respect the question. I believe that the answer, unfortunately, comes more from a macro solution from the federal and state levels. And it's we're put in an extremely difficult position as a City of Mesa Police Department to deal with that, since there isn't very good direction, there's not very good systems. It's really hard to execute on something when there is no good system to execute. You go into a basketball game, if you don't have a very good game plan, you don't have much of a chance to win the game because the plan's not very good. That said, given what we're dealing with, I believe that our roles as local police departments are to enforce the current laws, to be trained such that we can cross, as the mayor has said, and cross over and assist in that process, but it can't be a primary focus. I think our primary focus has got to be to provide health and safety and a good place and continue to have a good, safe place for us to live. That's not a balance sheet item. That's not a fixed thing. That's going to continue to move. I think we're going to have to continue to evaluate that and continue to train our officers. As I've, you know, had the good fortune or bad fortune, however we might look at it, to see some of those situations just by being out in the community, whether it's with the kids or whatever else, I believe our officers really do need to be trained and know that conflict management, that it's very important to be careful with that. We can turn situations that aren't nearly so bad into really bad really quickly, and then you have communities splitting apart. The ultimate solution to that is to have all these communities, these peoples, that we're all one color, we're all one people. We aren't a bunch of different peoples and different cultures. We want to become one, and then we'll solve that problem. And I respect the police department. I watch them, and I don't envy their job. I certainly want to be there to help, to try to come up with some solutions, but that's the best answer I have for you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
I was hoping you'd ask me how you make a birdie on six.
Vice Mayor?
Morning, John. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Another 54 years? I'm with you right there.
You know, there's a Perkinson that lived to 101, so my goal is to live to 102.
Very good. Very good.
But he got to drink a lot of whiskey back in Illinois, so I don't know. I got to see if they can change the process. So.
Well, you know what my question is going to be. We have public safety needs in this community that need to be met. And those needs include infrastructure needs, fire stations, things like that, that can be bonded for. In the past, general obligation bonds have been paid for out of the general revenue stream. This council has talked about, in the future, any general obligation bonds going on the ballot, telling the voters that they will be repaid with a secondary property tax. I'd like to hear your opinion on that, and also if you would just discuss for a few minutes your feelings about finances in general for the city.
As you can see from my resume, I was trained in accounting. I think the last job interview I had, wake up, Chris. Brady's over there sleeping on me now. Come on. Oh, okay. That big screen Samsung TV you have right there. I think my last job interview was for Pricewaterhouse, accounting firm, many years ago. Purport to be a master of municipal finance. It's interesting to me. I think it probably is a lot simpler than we all try to make it. I don't believe our current revenue stream system works in this city. I know that's not a popular view, obviously, because the electorate voted down the property taxes. I do believe that we will always, similar to the statement I talked about balance sheets, it's not a balance sheet item. This is a continuing thing. We have to evaluate it at all times, and there will always be different decisions that have to be made relative to revenue streams. But I believe that bonding is necessary. I believe secondary property taxes are necessary. I believe primary property taxes are necessary. And I believe sales taxes are necessary. Sort of odd coming from a, quote, you know, white Mormon male Republican developer, right? I think I speak clearly for myself. I think you've all known me. You've seen where I've served. You've seen the places I've served. I believe we need to get the revenue streams in. And just like we do in our families and our businesses and our schools, we need to manage the funds that come in. And I have trust in the people sitting both to my right and my left that they can help us manage that. I believe our staff is extremely competent, and I believe we need, as a community, as a city, need to have more faith in that, because I believe our quality of life needs to be better. I believe we need to have more parks. I believe we need to have more baseball fields for all my kids to play baseball on. And now it's moved into skate parks. I believe we need to have more skate parks. If you want to go see where the kids hang out, they hang out on skate parks. We need to have places where we can provide good, wholesome activities to take place so we have less police enforcement and more police involvement. And that may not be a popular view in the city, but it's just the logical conclusion that I've come to relative to our finance. It's really not that complicated. It's really pretty simple. I hope that answers your question, Claudia.
Councilmember Jones?
Good morning,
Bill.
Good morning. Thank you for being here, and I think I'll rephrase it a little bit differently. My question is, what is your feeling in regard to decisions that this council has made in the last 5 years in regards to finances and so forth, specifically decisions that have been made in recent years?
That's a really broad question, and I'm not sure that I'm even competent. I can't tell you, while I have a sleep problem and I generally stay up at night and watch goofy different things, it's not generally counsel unless there's a really cool zoning case going on. Okay. Again, I totally understand, and I mean Mr. Rawls isn't here, and he and I have stopped off at his place on many occasions and gone round and round about public finance with Tom Rawls. I think I was his first contributor when he tried to run for Congress many years ago, and we obviously have differing views. There's room for differing views. I don't know, Kyle, I'd really rather you ask me that question in specific, because I'd have an answer relative to Waveyard. I'd have an answer, as Chris knows, relative to Pinal County land. I'd have an answer, as Doug Tessendorf knows, relative to lands that are in our city. I'd have a different answer relative to the secondary property tax, obviously, based on my previous statement. So I don't know that I'm going to spend a lot of time on good or bad decisions going backwards, because we got to go forwards. There's really I learned from the past, but it's really time to move forward on that. So if you have a specific issue, I think I could answer it better. But in general, I think I've sort of answered it with Claudia.
Well, actually, John, you did answer it in a roundabout way just now, because my curiosity is, it's easy to be armchair quarterbacks on things. And there were a lot of decisions made where people jumped conclusions, make statements, and in many cases they were absolutely off the mark. So my curiosity was just based on your observation, because if I'm going to be working with you, I want to know how you feel about how we've been moving and progressing. That was what I was after.
I think given the makeup of your council, I think you've done the best you could do, but I think there's been some real struggles in consensus building. And that's a very, very difficult thing when it comes to leadership. And I do believe we can do better in consensus building and making some of those decisions in quick fashion. Sometimes the people who have elected you, I've never been elected for anything since ninth grade president at Keno Junior High Colts, but I believe they want us, or want you to make decisions. And I think that there probably was some decisions relative to secondary property tax, for example, that I probably would have made differently. But I'm not, our world has become a bunch of armchair quarterbacks. All you got to do is turn on CNN, Fox, ESPN, wherever. And they, I don't know how they can speak for 2 weeks on whether Phil Mickelson should have hit a 7-iron or a 6-iron. It's like, how do you talk that long about that? Let's move on and go learn how to hit one. So,
okay, and I guess going back to the days when it was just Mesa Westwood and Mesa Junior and Keno, I'll forgive you for all that, because I was the Mesa boy. So.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
I think the goal to live to 101 is very admirable. I'm just hoping to make it to 40. That's just my crack at the rest of the council.
I'd like,
sorry.
I'd like to.
Every time I get the chance. You,
doctor.
You are sort of known. You are sort of known as the golden boy. So.
Oh God, help us all then. John, good to meet you. I'm looking at one of the answers that you wrote here, and it said, I'll quote it. Unfortunately, your computer went out, so I'm trying to read your handwriting. I heard the story.
Heidi was supposed to give you that story.
It says, I could and would make sure the current issues at hand are not dropped or mishandled during the transition to new leadership. It's a transition I'm interested in. You're the only candidate that outright stated no, that you're not interested in running. One said yes, the other two went, maybe, depends on how much fun I'm having in 7 months. It's the transition I'm interested in. Between now and May, when the new council comes in, and if you, assuming that you do not run, that somebody else takes your seat, we're going to be making some very important decisions. We're going to be talking about the bonds and how we finance them. We're going to be talking about the possibility of a new zoning ordinance and mixed-use development. We're going to be looking at a vision plan for the Gateway area and how that impacts the developers, the users, and Boeing and a lot of other folks. So we're going to have to make those decisions before June. So since you are a bridge to whoever's going to take that place, what do you see as your role? Are you going to have some trouble making those decisions? How are you going to make those decisions? Which ones do you think will have to be made, and which ones will have to be delayed to a new council?
Well, you're testing my memory on what those decisions are going to be, so you're welcome to chime.
Zoning, the bonding, the financing ones, the vision for Williams Gateway. Why don't we talk about those to be specific?
Well, first off, as I get up in the middle of the nights and the middle of the mornings and drive around, it's really easy to be inspired now because Rex's signs are everywhere. So I'll obviously be receiving all that wonderful, you know, genre of talent. I tease him about that because he looks so good. How do you look that good at that age? But the when I say transition, I really believe he was elected. And I believe if I were asked to do this, it would be my job to try. You know, I would hopefully communicate with him too, and really understand some of the positions of the. I hope he's in touch with our district as well as I believe I think I am. But I think that's what I was referring to in that transition. And relative to those specific issues, I did look at that question as a yes no answer. So I answered it as a yes no answer, I'm trying to think of the key zoning cases that are out there. You'll have to tell me something if something's up right now.
Yeah, it's not as any particular zoning case. It's rewriting our zoning ordinance to allow for mixed-use development and modernizing that. And that's a big decision given Proposition 207, the potential for takings issues.
I would get more into the detail, as you know from my history and my resume, I have extensive experience in not just one area of development or entitlement, because I'm the guy that does the whole thing and deals with the neighborhoods and deals with the people one-on-one firsthand. And as you also know, well, none of my cases I think have ever really been argued in front of you because they've always been consent. I'm a big believer that the responsibility of the developer is to bring it here so it is on consent. I'm not a big believer in the argument of, you know, property rights, development rights versus the private owner who lives next door. I have never, in my, how many years now, 25 years of doing that, I've never found a situation where, if handled properly in the beginning, it ever came to the train wrecks that you all get to see, and I've sat on the other side of it in some of the boards and councils I've sat on. But I'm a proponent of this, the new zoning ordinances. I believe that will be helpful. I behind the scenes, believe it or not, was pushing the two major land players that purchased out there around Williams Gateway, and I think we're going to be incredibly excited to see how that goes through. And I think staff, combined with those good landowners and developers, will come up with some really neat stuff, and we're going to see some really neat things. And I would love to be part of those decision makings, and I think I can be a real help because of the people I know and my experience from seeing that all come together, not just in the details of those. You and I would spend a lot of time on that question. I apologize. I didn't answer that very quickly because it was a pretty broad question. Was it a trick question?
No.
Okay. Trick question. Just making sure. Sorry, I'm over.
John, in your application, you indicated that you would bring a fresh perspective to the council. And I was curious on what that meant. Could you elaborate on what you would be bringing as a member, knowing the personalities and the background of us? How would you complement us as a council?
I think I've been around all of you enough in different settings that I feel like I'm not going to have to spend, maybe with the exception of Scott, a lot of time getting to know you. I know most of you, whether it be through, you know, charity involvement or community involvement or late night TV. You know, so I've watched and I've paid attention. I think my fresh approach would just merely be my not having been on your side of the table relative to these kind of decisions. And I believe that I, whether it be from a business owner, from a Little League coach, from a ball field advocate that worked really hard with private owners and to get ball fields done, or whether it be from promoting communities through the events that I've been involved with, I believe that I'll be able to complement all of you in this short time frame. I don't think there's a big learning curve of me doing that. So I think when I said that, that's what it wasn't. There wasn't a lot of real deep Dalai Lama kind of stuff going on there, you know.
Okay. So. That's it for our questions. I have a 3-minute time period for summation, if you'd like.
Well, I noticed that I built up quite a bank of additional time there as I went through those questions, and I answered them quicker. So what, probably, did anybody keep track?
No, you still just get...
Terry probably tell me I have 9 or 10 minutes. I would just conclude again by complimenting all 12. I thought it was a very nice sign to see. I guess it's too bad we have to go through elections, because I think that was a nice sign of showing that people really do want to serve. It does show that elections are hard, and not very many people want to go through elections. Sure. I obviously have shared that. Somebody asked me, well, why haven't you run for office? I think there's a few people sitting in this room that have asked me that. And to this point in my life, it's been that I felt that my time and my energies and my talents and were better served in serving in other capacities where I've been able to affect lives a little differently than I could have in a elected position, and that's just me. And that's why I appreciate you so much, is because you've been the elected positions, and I know how hard that is. I really believe that we are at a crossroads right now relative to Mesa, and I think Mesa's been a great place to live, and I think can even be a greater place to live. I think we can figure out this finance thing. I think we can, through consensus building and showing consensus to the electorate and the people of Mesa, we can, I hope, I don't know whether the words educate, persuade, it's probably a combination of all the above, but I really believe we can make strides in solving these cash inflow issues that we have, so that we can then take that well-entrusted funds and resources, and we can do things to improve the quality of life. Our parks and our fields and our places can be better. And property tax, it's just mind-boggling to me that we can't, I just think we can do better at explaining, because it's a very simple financial model. As the location we live in has a beautiful riparian activity up the Salt River, or it has additional parks or better parks, or as we improve where we are and the quality of facilities and amenities, our property values go up. The amount of property tax that we each would be paying is minuscule compared to what our property values would be. There's a direct relationship, and I just don't believe that the people of our good city, or at least those small number who vote, understand that. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have been here today, and again, compliment everybody in the process.
Okay, thank you, John. The study session, and I want to make sure I have the date right, October 25th, is that correct? All right, will be when we will put it on the agenda and have discussion and see. The process will be whoever gets four votes would be the one that would serve. And my understanding is that would be for, and after that, it's an immediate, they would be sworn in as a council member at the next council meeting or that day, or how does that work?
As soon thereafter as the candidate is available, but they will be seated for the next council meeting, Mayor.
Okay. All right. So that's our process. Any questions on it, Vice Mayor?
I do have a question and then a comment. My question is, we're scheduling this for a study session. Is there any problem with our voting on this in the study session?
Vice Mayor, I guess that's a good question. You will appoint, but the formal appointment will probably be at the next regular council meeting, similar to when we do June. But we can vote on that in a study session, is my recollection. I'll go back and confirm that, but that's my recollection. And then the appointment process, the swearing in, the ceremonial swearing in will be at the next council meeting, and they will be seated for that council meeting.
November 5th.
And the ceremonial swearing in is different. They can be sworn in at any point in time. The clerk can swear them in, and then they could have that formal swearing in later. But you'll go back and confirm about whether or not we can actually vote on something like that in the council meeting.
And I'm fairly confident the answer is yes, but I'll confirm that.
Well, and look at also the time frame, so we don't have to call a special election. So we may have to have a special council meeting
That's right. So either way,
time frames.
I'm sorry, Mayor. You're right. Either way, it will be on the 25th. It's whether we post it as a study session or we post it as a special council meeting.
Okay.
And that was what I was clarifying.
Right.
Is it okay for me to make a couple of other comments about process?
Certainly.
All right, the way it's posted, for me to make some other comments about process here?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I think that the people from District 5 ought to feel pretty darn good after hearing what they heard today. I think the thing that's very, very disappointing to me is that we don't have four people running from every district that's going to be up for grabs in the next election who are the quality, and I'm not referencing the quality of people who have already stated that they're going to run, but this kind of dialogue and this kind of debate would serve the city well. To have this kind of discussion about important issues is going to be lacking in the next election if you know it holds true in terms of what we're seeing with candidacy, simply because people don't step up to run. Apparently being appointed is a much preferable way, as John said. My comments here have to do with where we go next, and that is that I don't want us to end up in a position where we're sitting here going through 20 votes to get to a place to appoint somebody. We will be appointing somebody. As far as I'm concerned, it's going to happen somehow or other, because I don't think it's right for us to ask the citizens to spend $40,000 to have an election for a couple of months. It simply doesn't make sense to me. But the thought, as I've gone through this thought process, and today reaffirmed that for me, is that we have outstanding candidates here. There may be one or two who rise to the top for each of us, and what I am requesting is that we consider who our top two candidates might be, and when there's a motion made, if it's for one of your top two candidates, can you please consider voting for that person, even if they're not number one, if they're one or two, voting for that person so we don't go through 20 votes. I have thought about how this could take place, and if everybody here has their candidate who they're going to go to the mat for regardless, we can't get to four. So I feel much more confident in that process and what I just described after listening to these folks today the residents of District 5 will be well served. There is no doubt about it in my mind. But I don't think that the city will be well served by a wrangling over this. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Mike.
Hearing that, Claudia, I guess somebody should make the motion first. That way they win. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. My question is, what is the day of appointment as far as the legality goes? I know we have Friday following next Thursday is the 30th day. If we decide on the appointment, do we meet the legal challenge of being within the 30 days next Thursday?
Yes, we do. I think the goal will also be to have the person sworn in by the 30th day, but the charter only states that they must be appointed by the 30th day.
When we talk about process, as Claudia mentioned, the one that I've always thought was the most direct and the easiest to analyze is you rank, everyone does their own ranking from 1 through 4, and you see if there's some pattern in there that gets you the 4 votes. So you submit it on paper or something else, and then you tabulate and see how many people have ones. And if you've got 4 ones or 3 ones and a 2, you've got the person picked. Now, I'm not sure everybody wants to be ranked in that order. So sometimes it's an embarrassing, well, I got ranked 4 by him. How'd that happen? But that's how we do other selections quite often in other areas, from city managers right on down. We'll rank them and figure out how we get to a conclusion. So just be considered. Right now we're planning on who's making the motion. If they get 4, that one moves forward. And I kind of agree with Mike, whoever makes the motion, and seems I get to call on them, I guess that would be me.
Well, and that was going to be my comment about Mike's comment, is that, yeah, if you make the motion, but then everybody else sitting there would have to agree that that was one of their top 2 choices. So making the motion does not ensure that the person you move for will be approved. My concern with doing that rank order thing is, mm-hmm. I don't think legally you can do that. I think, I mean, wouldn't we have to put our names on it?
I plan on putting
my name. Oh, you were going to put your name on it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not blind. It's everyone says, here's my 4 rankings. We see how they tabulate out. No.
I'm not doing that. I am not doing that because these folks don't deserve that. These folks are so quality that I'm not doing that.
Mike?
Just as a matter of comment, however it shakes out, I would be very much honored to serve with any member who came forward this morning. I'm very appreciative of your desire to serve and very impressed with your backgrounds and qualifications, and I thank you for this process. So whatever happens, I'll be supportive of what the majority of this council is.
Well stated. Scott?
I have to throw in one thing, is that I hope some of you at least consider running for this office. We've talked about how good you are, how great the answers were, but we're only appointing for 7 months. We need somebody to actually run for that office in a few months, so at least think about it.
Yeah, and I also want to compliment everyone. It is very hard to know city finance and zoning and questions of immigration and the rest, but this is what you will be faced very quickly if you're selected as a council member. So I'm not going to apologize. Some of the questions were direct and very hard to respond to if you haven't been pretty well brought up to speed by someone. That's something that you do learn through a campaign, but I was also very impressed with the knowledge that the 4 brought forward today. So I want to thank you for your preparation work and also for your involvement in the community in the past, because that's what brought you here today. You've been outstanding community leaders, and it's showed through your resumes and your background and what you do for Mesa. So again, I think we all want to thank you for your participation here today.
Can we applaud them? Will the mayor give us the prerogative to
all
applaud
right.
these
Let's
folks?
Go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Usually we don't allow that at meetings.
I know, that's why I asked.
Set a precedent.
That's it. All right, let's move on to item number 2, which is to hear a presentation and discuss expenditure limitation alternatives, including permanent base adjustment.
Mayor, you might want to suggest that the candidates remain to hear this, because this is an important issue that we're going to be deciding as a council.
Yeah, we'll watch it later on Channel 11.
Thank you.
And I think I'm an obvious switching gears this morning, so hopefully this will be illuminating. This is a continuing discussion that we've had on our expenditure limitation and the impacts that we've got, and your instructions to continue to the discussions related to both home rule and permanent base. 2 weeks ago, you gave us further instructions to come back with some possible components and what the effects would be of using the permanent base, using a 5-year horizon and a 10-year horizon. So this morning, I'm just going to go through some background on these. I'll go through some of the components that we've calculated. I'll go through an example of how we would adjust the base based on your direction related to components, if that's your desire to go forward with. And then I've calculated out those 5-year windows and the 10-year windows. And then I would ask for some further direction this morning. Just as a reminder, our expenditure limits are set in accordance with the Constitution and the states of the state laws of the state statutes. We always have to adopt a balanced budget, so no matter what legal alternative we go forth with or choose to go forward with, is always limited to resources. So it does not give us carte blanche to come up to whatever level of expenditures. It always has to be a balanced budget. The expenditure limit that the state has and has imposed on us is based on the 1979-80 expenditures, less any applicable exclusions that would be applied. It's adjusted each fiscal year by population and inflation, which is provided by the state's Economic Estimates Commission. What we would be doing if we went forward with a permanent base adjustment, and on slide 2, in the March 2008 election, it would adjust the 08-09 base amount. Under state law, the preliminary base amount, under how they calculate it now, would be just under $494 million. So that's what would be allowed, with exclusions. Without adoption of the expenditure alternative, either home rule or permanent base, we're going to exceed by approximately $100 million that base in 08-09. So that's our first level of issue. Without any additional consideration to give any other components, $100 million is where we need to adjust our base if we go the permanent route. So if we, So we would go back for an election asking for a $100 million adjustment, which would bring our 08-09 base up to $494 million.
Right.
And then it would be subject then to the inflation factors out into the future.
Okay.
And Mayor, just quick, but that solves a one-year problem. What it doesn't do, though, is then each year after that, the rate at which the state allows it to grow is still less than what our typical growth is?
Yes. We would be squeezed based on, and I think you'll see it when we go through some of the components. The inflation factors or the growth factors that we're under pressure-wise typically exceed those limitations, and that's why all but 13 cities in the state have adopted some form of alternative limitation. It's very difficult to stay when you're in a growth pattern. If you're at a static growth pattern, it's much easier. Anytime you add a new major service, you've added another level of cost that would not be typically allowed. It becomes incremental rather than smooth.
Okay.
Just to give you an idea of what goes out, here's our forecasted base amounts. Some of these, the official numbers are provided through 12/13 by DES. I've gone through some of our regression analysis and given us a forecast out through 17/18 so we could get the 10-year view. They don't usually give us numbers on that large of a horizon. So here's the growth factors that would be seen under their limitation amounts.
And Chuck, just again, clarify, if the council were to consider these amounts for the permanent base, it would be only for today's level of staffing.
Correct.
And we would suggest that because our average percentage change, this is what the state would only allow to grow by, would be these percentages. Our experience has been more than this. Therefore, every year, again, we would see a continuing pressure on not being able to meet those limitations. And again, this would include no additional, and we'll go through this, but it's increased no growth in any factor, whether it's capital improvements or whether it's staffing levels.
it would be frozen at this level.
Typically, just to give you, we've done a little bit of analysis in this area. Typically, we're behind the curve a quarter point to a half a point per year, and it's unbelievable what the compounding of that does into the future. But typically, that's where we are behind the curve, is that quarter to half a point.
Okay. Scott?
Chris, or whoever wants to answer it, so if this is based on our current level of service, we approve the bonds next year, we add three new stations, then do we have to go through another election? How's that work?
Well, you'd have to cut your budget by that amount. If you adopted this permanent base, this, what we're just trying to give you right now is, we'll get to what that number will be. We're trying to show you, if no changes are made in the base budget today, as it stands today, this is what the number would look like if you only grew it by the allowed percentages by the state. Okay. What we're going to show you is other components that say, what if we had a bond election? What if we had to add staffing for the fire stations? What if we continue to maintain the level of staffing that we currently have for police officers? We'll get to that. We're just starting off kind of as your base scenario right now. This is what that number represents.
Okay. Yeah, I think what's important to take from this is it's we're adjusting that 08-09 base, and we're trying to get to something in the future. So we're trying to give you the calculations and a good substantive understanding of what we're trying to adjust and how we would grow it out into the future in this demonstration.
Okay. What happened in your 13-14 time frame? Why such a big jump in that year?
We use the econometrics we get out of the U of A, so I'm sure we've probably got another growth cycle. You know, typically the housing and the economic cycles are 4 to 6 years, so we use they use the global insight, so I'm sure it's their economic factors that are in those cycles.
Okay, thanks.
Some of the base adjustment considerations that we've talked about, the public safety bond packages, so I've calculated some numbers for you based on these, so I just wanted to go through what we've done. We've done that with a five-year package of what we're talking about now, a five-year window on the current consideration, and then we've added another bond package because I'm sure we would come back and revisit that in the future. We've looked at the regional transportation plan in the 5- and 10-year fiscal views, and then we've looked at increasing full-time equivalents to maintain the employee-to-resident staffing ratios. So that would be called our current level of service. Rather than what we're talking about under our forecast model being our current level of staffing, we would now keep our current level of service into the future, so based on the ratios. I broke those down by police sworn, fire sworn, and all other employees. I did look at the utility commodity pricing and consumption changes, so there's some volatility out there with that, so we looked at that. And we made some allowances for any possible voter approval approved plans. So I gave you some ranges that'll be on that. So if we go to page 6, I hope you can see these are a little bit compact. What I did for the bond packages on the two packages, because we were looking further down below on fire sworn on their ratio of staffing, I took the fire station packages out of the bonds on the O&M side, just so further explain. So this is just the public safety non-fire sworn people in O&M. And then in the 13-14, which doesn't show, is what I gave you, 08-09, 12-13 is the five-year view, and 17-18 is the 10-year view.
So Chuck, the numbers, the first two numbers are purely capital. We've not included the operations in there?
No, this is the operations related to things like the arraignment center. Let's just say we did a mirror package of the first without any fire sworn. I issued another bond package, not knowing what those assumptions would be, in 13-14 to go out into the future, just to give us some benchmarks. I did the first five-year regional transportation plan, which is also tied currently to what we're looking at on the bond package. That's the five-year average on that, $18 million. Regional transportation plan, then the remainder of the plan out there in the 10-year view, there's 12 years left. So $4 million a year out into the future there. Now, if we were to maintain non-sworn FTEs, this is all employees other than sworn, and maintain the current 6.43 FTE per 1,000 residents, you can see how that grows in an immediate effect in 08-09, all the way into 12-13 and 17-18. Now, this is where some of our growth rates exceed those, most significantly exceed the limitation amounts because of the cost of health care, retirement issues. That's the way it compounds out into the future. If we were going to maintain our current police sworn of 1.86 FTE per thousand, you can see the impact of that, and I've added an O&M component to each of these. It cost us X number of dollars beyond the salaries and so forth to maintain an officer out into the future. What, I've done the same with fire also.
Right. What's your population numbers at those dates?
In 13, 14, or in 12, 13, and I'm limited by the DES discussion in this. That's always, but that's what the benchmark is, DES. 481,400 in 12, 13, and out in 17, 18, 516,000.
And what was your 08, 09 then, so I just have a growth factor on it?
That is 456,600. That's, I know that I see the looks on your faces. Okay. Yes, it differs, but this is what controls the expenditure limitation by law.
That doesn't make sense that in 5 years you're going to grow. And then, well, okay. Vice Mayor.
Could you explain to me, now, why are we controlled by the DES number if we're building the base for our own number? I can understand at growth, but I don't understand you're buying into the original number.
I don't necessarily buy into that number, but that is what the calculation is based on. They'll adjust it as time goes on. So we'll get the benefit of the factor.
And because base year 08-09 has to do with current level of staffing, and after that, that's when you build in the additional people. That's why it doesn't matter if you buy into that into their number.
Correct.
Okay, what number are we using for our purposes right now? Not for DES. What is our number?
We're right around 460,000 according to the planning numbers, and yeah. I don't have the correct number to the latest, but that was
the number I had been using, but then somebody popped up with a 480 the other day, and I don't know where that came from.
No, it's the number he's using is what we're
460
using.
460 is the number. Okay. It, in the neighborhood of 460. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Now, Mayor and Council, the idea that I guess we could debate whether or not we believe those population growths are going to take place in 5 years, 10 years. See, that's a choice we get to make now. We wanted to kind of give you a projected of what somebody, third party, that we're using today. Again, this is an exercise that ultimately we have to make the determination of how far, what is that number added to the future? Because then you have to set it in today's dollars, but limited to the percentage increases that Chuck showed us
back on page
previously. Was it page 4 or 5?
Page 4.
4. So it's kind of an exercise in saying, okay, here's where we think we need to be in 10 years. And then you have to back that out, those percentages out as they're compounded and say, but I set the number. What does that number mean today? And how will it grow on these percentages to get to where I'm in 10 years? Mm-hmm. So certainly we could say, well, in 10 years, we really think the population's only going to be something less than 500,000. That's fine. Again, when councils are setting their budgets, this is just to give a limitation. It's not intended to say this is exactly what it's going to be. If frankly, it's more to our benefit to be conservative on the high end of what the number is, because if you choose anything too constricted, then there's a likelihood that you will actually reach your limitation before the 10 years. And that becomes important when you think about the cycle of elections and when we can actually go back to the voters to do either home rule or permanent in the future. A 10-year number, at least trying to find a number that will work at least for 10 years, then gives a council more options in between to try to get back on cycle with home rule or permanent. So those are, we can certainly adjust these numbers down. Again, it's just we're estimating. Nobody's approving the budget. Nobody's saying that's exactly what the budget's going to be. It's right. An estimate.
Well, and to give you a good example, let's look at the police sworn. We could not afford to step up our budget now by $37 million. Okay? But it doesn't matter when we reach that ratio in that first five-year window. It's still going to cost us, if we reach that ratio, $44 million in 12-13. So that is the target we're shooting to cover, not the 36 in the first year. We're looking to cover the 44 in the out year. So there are going to be lots of gives and takes based on what your available resources are and what your actual growth patterns are. So these are estimates at the best. So.
And they can be reduced. I mean, we're trying to give kind of the most conservative,
correct,
large number, but we can certainly modify any of these numbers.
Mayor?
Yes.
My point, Chris, wasn't that it should be reduced, but that it was too conservative. And you're using the word conservative in one way, when I would use it in
to
the
me,
other
it's always
way.
Better to overshoot limitations. That's liberal, he wants to use the word.
The point I was trying to make was that if our population numbers are too low, that then perhaps our budgetary numbers are too low. And I don't want to come in with a number that, you know, it ends up we have 550,000 people.
Oh. Well, then we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try to think of another term.
Right. Okay. I don't think it's a liberal conservative issue.
So what I've done is then add some more components. I talked about the fire staffing component in the first bond package. That's three new stations currently. I wouldn't suggest that we change that current bond package. But to maintain that fire station staffing for that 10-year horizon, you've got to put two additional stations on top of the three that we would have had in the first package. And that's why I split out the fire personnel from the rest of that bond package above, because it would have to be increased in order to meet those needs. Then I threw in some utility price and consumption change components out to the, and then we added a voter approved plan sales tax, whatever we had to come up with. I gave you a 1 mil increase and a 2 mil increase with the possible revenues that have to be generated against those to cover expenditures. And if we go to the next page, here is just an example. I just picked some components to throw into this calculation, not suggesting anything, but to let you see how this would be done. So I did a public safety bond package for the two cycles, covered the regional transportation plan, increased the non-sworn and the two sworn areas, police and fire, to maintain the current level of service with that ratio of employees to residents. I used utility price and consumption changes and the possible approved plan in a 2 mil increase. So what that does is your total components here in 08-09 are going to cost you just under $48 million. But we're having to look at the horizon of just out under $80 million for expenditure limitation in 12-13 under this scenario. So we already have a base adjustment that we need, and it's in the fuchsia color, of $100 million. So for me to cover that $79,451,000 out in the future, we need to use the deflated value of that amount in 08-09, which would be $69,434,000. So I've taken that $79 million, deflated it to today's value, because once you adjust your base, you're subject to then, again, the state's limitations. So our total five-year horizon, if we were looking at that, we would be going to, if you were asking the voters to cover it, would be almost $170 million. That would be your base adjustment on a five-year horizon.
Yeah, but that base adjustment is over the $400 and some
right.
million.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, and I'll get to that here. Because I've come up with the recommendation today if you're going to go with the permanent base adjustment because of some of the constriction factors.
Right.
Now, I took those same factors, and you can still see it's got the same cost of $809, and I took the 10-year horizon. So those costs will inflate through the 10-year period out to $134 million. So to deflate that amount for an 08-09 adjustment and then be subject to those inflation factors again would be $94,861,000 added to the $100 million. So you'd need a total base adjustment of $195 million in 08-09. So if we go to slide number 9, you could see then what our total view would be on a 10-year adjustment. You'd add that $195 million to the $494 million would be $689 million. Now, I would recommend that we take this approach if we go with a expenditure limitation. There's a couple reasons. It gives you plenty of time to evaluate your capacity on this horizon. You're talking a 5 to 10 year horizon is what you're shooting for now. You're for sure going to cover your 5, but you may be constricted from 5 to 10 based on what other real growth rates are and real pressures are. It allows you then to have multiple times to evaluate returning to the 4-year cycle if you want to return to the home rule. A 5-year cycle, you may not see the constrictions coming quick enough to get back on a proper cycle. It may force you to another adjustment on the permanent base to not have to revisit that issue constantly. So I would just recommend, if we're going to go with the permanent base, you look at a 10-year horizon so that you have multiple chances to adjust this in the future.
And Mayor and Council, let me just also remind you what is not in this number. This doesn't have any new capital dollars for libraries, parks, any other city facilities. That's not, I mean, you've heard, it's just there's some things we get kind of overwhelmed by the numbers that we're looking at just to go forward with the current level, but it doesn't include some of those components that, again, with population growth moving forward is significant. And looking at possible development of the southeast part of Mesa, in that the infrastructure, the capital needs that will be required there are going to be tremendous. And at some point, those will also have to be included in an expenditure by the city. Now, how that's going to be paid for, you know, we haven't decided, but just the development build-out of water, sewer, and streets in that area could be very significant, too.
Wow.
And as you said, this is just setting the limits, not saying how it's paid for. Right. It's just saying that's what our limitations would be. But if I understand it correctly, too, this is only maintaining the current level of service as the percentage of employees, say sworn officers. That's not getting us to the national average. Right now we're at 1.86 officers per 1,000. And if we were to get up to the national average, we would need to hire 300 officers today just to get on the national average and then move from there. And we're not even calculating that into this. On the first page, it shows it.
But you're right. It's not included in the number.
But as you carried it through here for that base adjustment, it's not part of it. But it's just maintaining the 1.86 percentage, which is far below the national average, and still we're going to be short. So it's to get on the national average for our fire and police, the numbers would just be staggering, much more staggering than they are, if we were to look at a base adjustment that would get us to that level.
Vice Mayor.
Chris, let me follow up on something that you said. You talked about capital expenditures, but my understanding of this is that it does not include repayment of bonds. And so when you're talking about the capital expenditures, if those expenditures have to do with bonds, then that's outside of it. But it would be the operational costs for those new facilities, wouldn't it? Or is there a component here that I'm missing?
Well, I'll just make sure we're on the same page.
Sure.
Built into the base, the first number you see is the payment of the debt service. The existing $256 million is not
debt service. The debt service component.
Oh, it's exempt. That's right. That's one of the exemptions.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I'm talking about, so even if we issued new debt, that wouldn't affect here.
That's correct.
But the capital expenditures would be. That's where I'm trying to get to.
You use the term capital. So if we paid any dollars out of if we got up against the expenditure limitation, what Chris is saying is true. If you get up against the expenditure limitation, and even if you have local revenues available, you're forced to bonding because you're watching and managing your expenditure limitation rather than managing your own cash flow.
Right. Well, and I understand that it limits what you're doing, but I think that the important component that also gets left out is that if you build additional facilities, it isn't the capital costs which you may be repaying with bonds. Your utility bonds are, you know, being paid for with utility revenues that don't come under here. Your general obligation bonds are paid for outside of this.
No, the expenditures would show up on this.
No.
Not the debt service.
No, I didn't say the debt service.
Correct.
I said the expenditures, not the payment of the debt over time, but when we bring those facilities to be approved for the construction costs, those would show up. Yeah. I mean, they're part of the total budget.
If you're paying for it with bonds, no. It's if you're using capital dollars. That's why I'm trying to stay clear. I'm trying to divide the line. If Debt service and bond proceeds are exclusion.
So you don't have to show the capital expenditure of a bond-funded project?
That is true. It's the true capital where you're paying it out. Let's call it revenue capital. Where
you're paying it out of your current. You're paying pay-as-you-go. Yes. You can't
go pay-as-you-go if you're managing your own cash flow.
Right. And so that was the clarification I was trying to make.
So the O&M part is not included.
So the O&M part isn't included. So what you're not talking about here is if you add those parks, even if you bond for them, and so it's outside of this adjusted amount, you still haven't included the money for the operational costs and the maintenance of those things. So, or is there any of that captured in here at all?
We have not taken anything in this package that outside of what we're going to finance with future issuance of debt, because we haven't had any capacity, because we're only maintaining current level of service in this situation. We are still somewhat constricted. So, to your point, not enough probably, but
some, because some. Current level of service would mean as you add people that you somehow calculated in a few more parks being operated and some things like that.
No, I
no, didn't. You didn't. Okay, that's what I was asking. All right, thank you.
So, well, I think the community is still in a little bit of a flux on how they want to operate long term on what revenue sources. I like the permanent base adjustment idea on that if, in fact, you made a one-time adjustment and then you grew by population and inflation, some of the underlying criteria of this, I think, are sound. I just don't think Mesa is at a point where it makes sense. I think we've got too many other things that we're still discussing, some large developments coming online, the gateway, all of those things, the officers, the parks. We have too many things that I don't think we've coalesced quite as a community on what type of community we want to be yet. So I think that having heard this presentation again, I think it makes more sense to stay with the home rule adjustment and at some later date maybe come back with a permanent base adjustment. It's kind of my analysis. Have you come to some other conclusions on that? Or?
Well, no, I guess I'm asking for direction. If you go to slide 10, this is kind of where I would ask for these decisions to be made. So we're requiring some direction on what your preference on the alternative is, home rule or the permanent base. And if we go the permanent base, what components do you want considered into that package? So that's why we've come up with an example. Rather than trying to cover all the bases, we've just given you an example of how we would approach it based on instructions. So any of those components that you would like to consider, and then what fiscal year view or horizon would you like to be calculated?
Okay. And the other reason that I was looking at the permanent base is I think the time frame, if you did one out 10 years, it gave you more flexibility in the interim to get back on the home rule cycle.
Right.
So refresh my memory on how many votes we need for home rule when in order to get on that November cycle, which is the complicating factor.
Yeah, we have the complication because of the change in elections, and I'm going to let Debbie speak to that a little bit.
Okay. Mayor and Council, the Constitution says that a home rule will be in effect for 4 years, and it needs to be renewed before it expires, or there would be the one-year gap, which is what we faced for 08. And the legislature moved our election back to March of 08 so that we can present either home rule or permanent base adjustment to the voters before the home rule expired. If we adopt home rule now in March of 08, we logically would face the same issue in 2012 because it will expire in June of 2012, but our election would not be held until November of 2012 for the mayoral election. One issue we had discussed is presenting home rule again to the voters in 2010. Going to cause a little complexity because we're not having a mayoral election then, but that would give us only a two-year home rule from 2008 to 2010, presented again in 2012 at the mayoral election, which would put us on the cycle. That's not, I think we are fully meeting the intent of the Constitution, because we're actually presenting it to the voters more frequently than required by the Constitution. However, because of this change in the election cycle, it's difficult using the home rule option to go with the normal process and the normal time frames that's set out in the Constitution. But again, you know, we're presenting it more frequently than the Constitution requires. On the other hand, if we did the permanent base adjustment, that changes the base level, and you could take it back to the voters. There's no prohibition from doing a permanent base adjustment and then, whenever council desires, using home rule again. So if you did permanent base adjustment in 2008, and then at the mayoral election in May 2012, council could consider a home rule alternative at that time.
And the mayor, does it have to be in a mayor's election? Can it be on a September or November? Could it be, so could we go on, so we could go 2010 and do a home rule one at that point for 4 years? Well, it still doesn't get you back to the mayor. Well, and then you do another one in 2012.
Right, and that's why you'd actually be having it every 2 years instead of, as contemplated, every 4 years.
Well, I think you just have to jump in every 2.25 years till you get back in the cycle if we're going to do home rule then.
That would be our recommendation.
Right. Okay. That's what we had hoped to, or you do one permanent adjustment and then come back in.
Right.
So do you have, but I still think your elections can cycle through without a special election. I mean, without even the 2010, can't we do that on the statewide?
You could, but yes, basically it would be November 2010. You're just not having a mayoral election.
So we piggyback in with the county's ballot and throw it on there.
Right.
Now, what if it's defeated? Does the one that preceded continue for 4 years?
That's something that we don't have a specific answer for, Mayor, because the Constitution says it's to be in place for 4 years. But we know at this point that we're only taking it for 2 years because to get back on cycle.
I'm looking for another answer.
Yeah.
Because okay. Vice Mayor.
A couple of questions on this. First of all, let's point out that we didn't put ourselves in this position. We were put in this position by an action of the state legislature. So this isn't the council putting us in this position. You're talking about November of 2012, but there is nothing that says it has to be November. It has to be a candidate election. Isn't that correct?
You're a regular council meeting, so you're correct. It could be
September.
Yes, yes, I apologize.
Of 2012 and September of 2010.
Yeah.
Or you could make the choice to go on the November ballot, but that may or may not have candidates on it for us in November.
But you can't do March of 2008 and then September of 2012 because you're off by
No, you have to do 10 in between unless you do a permanent base adjustment. I'm just questioning the September-November question.
No.
I just want to make sure because there's some changes now. We now have to do all bond elections in November.
Correct.
But that doesn't come into play on this one. The September-November thing doesn't come into play. It just has to be a candidate election.
Yes.
Okay. The reason I was interested in looking at the permanent base adjustment is because of this getting back on cycle issue. I actually prefer home rule. I think it's the way to go. But I'm concerned about the, election, and then all of these questions. I mean, the one that the mayor just asked, which is a great question. So what happens if it fails? Are we now back on this, and then what's our timeline? I think we start entering into constitutional questions that are going to have to be tested in the courts. And so that's why, if you do a time horizon that's out far enough, if you do a 10-year time horizon, and something, that is big enough so that we capture some of these additional things, then I think it's possible for us to do the permanent base adjustment and then get back in cycle. I am not fully committed to that yet. I am still thinking in that direction, but it has to be a number that is significant enough that we don't end up with problems before 2012 when we could get back on the home rule cycle. So that's kind of what I'm looking at right now, Mayor. Yeah,
I just think a 10-year horizon looking at this on a permanent base adjustment and the number and educating the people so they know what that is versus saying we want to spend what we bring in, we will have a balanced budget, is far too hard.
Yeah.
I think you're better off going every 2 years and just saying we spend what we bring in and not try to undertake a new change for a permanent base adjustment. It just, I'd hate to try to campaign through that. I understand it, but to do an explanation, you can't do an explanation in 5 minutes. I mean, you've been up here and we're asking you questions. We're supposed to know what we're doing. So that one would be very difficult. I think we better stay with the home rule Now, there may become a point when Mesa's stabilized and it makes some sense than just do a longer one because you can predict with more accuracy, but right now I don't think we're at that point.
And Mayor, my only added comment would be, and I'm sure you know, these issues haven't been tested in the court, as the Vice Mayor said, so we are kind of in uncharted territories because of the state legislature changing our election dates.
Okay. Well, we have, so our time frame currently is we will be doing a base adjustment. We're just trying to figure out which way we're doing it at this next election.
Correct.
When do we need to give input so that you are focused on permanent base or home rule selection?
Mayor, what we scheduled is the reason we did it today is to give you one more study session on the 25th, and then you could give us direction for the agenda for November 5th. And that's where you would, that's the date, the deadline to take the action of the council, to call the election. So we built in one more study session if you'd like us to, and then I guess we'd caption it so you could give us that specific direction on which way you'd like to go.
Okay. Well, I, at this point, am leaning towards doing, if we have to, multiple home rule elections to stay on home rule as opposed to trying to educate the whole community on what a permanent base adjustment is and what it means. I just don't think that's doable. Kyle?
Chuck, how hard would it be to throw some of these other numbers in there just as a ballpark for parks and stuff so we know really how big a number we're talking about?
What I would ask is that you give me a general direction. I can always come up with the numbers, but what is your general desire? Because I can play scenarios all day long based on priorities.
Priorities, would you just like to keep the same ratio? If you used a ratio of parks, acres per thousand, would that help you?
We could, and I could come up with an operating
I mean, we're just trying to come up with something that's familiar and simple.
Like you did with police and fire.
Why don't we just take
stay with the
ratio
of where we're at now.
We'll work on something like that.
Any other big items besides the parks component that you haven't done, like Kyle is suggesting?
Well, Mayor, I think Councilman Jones brought up a very good point on the police. The number that Chuck put in there on the tenure, I believe, was the 1.86. And that's why we showed the option of going to a 2.5 FT, maybe best we could ever do, but that's probably one of the more significant ratios. I think that's a ratio that council may, if you want to look at permanent, I would suggest, frankly, you at some point, I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of discussion about is that 1.86 adequate going forward. Is it 2.5? We gave you a number that's been thrown out there as sometimes a standard. That's one issue. After that, I'm trying to think of other just major issues that we've not identified. Chuck, do you recall?
I think you could, and you've played around with the sales tax. I think as other communities go to the 2% and others, we probably will follow at some point, so that 0.25% targeted for police or fire would probably be something that'll come up in the next 10 years. Would be the only suggestion I would have. Yeah.
2.5?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mike?
Oh, okay.
I think that 2.5, because of our heavy civilianization, I think that 2.5 is a little high.
Okay.
You know, we are, a lot of that's based on sworn detention and jailers in other communities, and we are, you know, I'd be tickled to death with 2.1 to 2.2. That would, I think, be really, that's 200 officers. So, I mean, it's 2.5 is really not realistic.
2.5 is 300 officers.
Right, today. Yeah. And it just doesn't seem to fit out.
Right. We've got a couple of different numbers. The sales tax one I was talking about is quarter.
Got
yours.
He's got that quarter.
This is the other.
Right. Sworn, yeah, well, there's too
sworn police versus sales tax.
Well, he said 0.25, and then you said 2.5. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, right now Glendale has gone to what, 2.2?
I believe so.
On the
Phoenix is 2.2.
Do you know what it is?
On the sales tax.
Sales tax.
I believe it was 2.2 or on their total, 2.2.
And those were dedicated public safety increases.
The last addition they made was dedicated public safety.
If you're looking for input, I'm there for home rule also. If we don't want to have to wait for future date.
Okay. Home rule?
I'm okay with that.
I think we're going along the lines of
sounds
focus
like we'll put
on
that on the November.
I guess then I was asking, would you like me to further calculate any of these components, or are we good with going forward with a home rule?
No, I think...
Well, it's your hobby.
You can do it all day.
No, I think the permanent base adjustment number,
I have other.
We're not going there at this time, so...
Yeah. No, you're right.
Okay, next item is hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Anyone? Mike?
Mayor, I've got a handout for you. I spent 4 days in New Orleans this last week at the International Police Chiefs Convention, and this is a very timely Police Chief's Guide to Immigration Issues. I know you had talked about having a study session in the near future. Mm-hmm. Get a chance to go through this. This is a strange document. It deals with issues of immigration and what model policy should be, but the last page it says, this is an incredibly difficult situation, and we know you're all going to have to face this differently. So there's a cop-out at the end. Also, there was a position paper on contrary to this position done by Sheriff Don Hunter of the Collier County, Florida Sheriff's Department, which is an Everglades-based interior Florida agricultural area. He has the same philosophy as Sheriff Arpaio. So he only had one copy of these. I'll give this to staff and have copies made. It's a contrary point to this one. So if we're going to have the discussions, I think it would be worthwhile to have this background information.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Good. Anyone else? Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. On Monday, I attended the Maricopa County Economic Forum, and very interesting presentation. Jay Butler from ASU, Elliot Pollock. And I apologize to the final gentleman whose name is Dennis, and I am blanking on his last name, but he does, he advises the governor, whoever the governor is, on what the economic conditions are in the state of Arizona. I think he calls himself a numbers wonk or a statistics wonk or something like that. They were talking about what's happening in Arizona, and I made a lot of notes, but the thing that I wanted to quote was Elliot Pollock when he said that he thinks it's an urban myth that we're more vulnerable to economic downturn because of a lack of diversity in the economy. He said he believes that we may have the most diverse economy in the country, possibly in the world. Jay Butler talked about the housing markets being different, that there isn't one housing market, and he repeatedly cited North Mesa, which has done very well in this economic downturn in the housing market, and he talked about how the values, the property values in North Mesa are going up. So when I stood to ask my question about potential future recession, because construction industry has really been moving forward based on continued growth in commercial construction, we're starting to see a slowdown in permitting in that area. I was able to stand up and say, as a resident of North Mesa, I can tell you why the housing market does well there, because it's a great place to live. So thank you.
Good plug. Kyle.
Tuesday evening, it was my privilege to be at our art center while our high school kids were performing. They had a special concert of choral, and all of our junior highs, 12 junior highs and 6 high schools performed there. And the closing number was 800 kids singing together with one song under the direction of a gentleman from ASU. But for me, it was important that our kids use our venue here, the art center, to have that experience of being in there. And I'd like to see more of that with the orchestras and other activities that take place at our high schools where they use the venue that we have created here in the city of Mesa. So I'd like to work to see if we could make more of those opportunities available. But it was a great experience to listen to all those youth performing in such a nice venue.
Okay. There is a tabletop exercise, as you're probably familiar now with the briefings, that has been taking place, a dirty bomb detonation scenario at the 101-202 with radiation effects casting over southeast from that location, mass evacuations, decontamination, hospitals being overrun with people needing assistance. I believe there was also a handicap golf tournament taking place at Riverview at the time, so there was some special needs evacuation, decontamination. I went to So I declared through the exercise, a tabletop, an emergency here in Mesa to bring in extra resources. That got kicked up, and then the governor did a conference and actually took it to a federal level to bring in federal people. And so we've gone through that whole scenario of working with different emergency operation centers and Tempe and Chandler and Mesa, and coordinating with Sky Harbor. They also had a potential terrorist at Sky Harbor that dropped a backpack, supposedly, that had another one of these bombs in it. And the whole scenario started with a detonation in Guam, and then I think it was up in Portland, and then it hit this area, so we knew that it was something that was kind of a beyond the scope of just one jurisdiction. Interesting to watch all of the different elements try to work and communicate. I still think there's some additional needs for improving on communication so that there's a real direct connect between the emergency operations centers, and all that data is somehow shared on a very updated basis, because if you one community is planning on evacuating 3 miles, another one's a half a mile, you know, how do you justify that, and how do you know what radiation level requires what type of response, and you get some kind of uniformity. So I think there'll be an evaluation done. I'm looking forward to that. They had a, I can't remember, it was the, what's the, not the CNN, but the
DNN.
All right. And they actually had, they would do telecasts and then throw out additional information that you could respond to, create maps of where the plume is going, so you had to respond. So I think that exercise is ongoing today as far as additional cleanup. And what do you do? How do you then turn that area of the community back into a useful? What type of damage has been done at the freeway? Because now the 101 and 202 has all been bypassed, so we've got huge traffic jams and messes. And the notification to the residents on how they can move back, how to decontaminate. We did close down two schools as part of the exercise, to lock down the kids in the schools, because inside a building was a safe environment with that type of level of radiation. Didn't have to do an immediate evacuation. So just to go through a scenario like that and work with the different groups, I thought was very worthwhile, and I'll be anxious to see the evaluation of it. So I want to thank all of the staff, and that we did have the opportunity to do one of that level, because I think a lot will be learned from it. All right. Anybody else? The next is scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Reminder, we do have our next study session will be on the 25th, Thursday, and that will be followed by a Community and Neighborhood Services Committee. And our next, then we have another study session on November 1st, Thursday, November 1st. Our next council meeting is November 5th. Also, reminder to the council, those who are participating in GAIN, that's this Saturday from 4 to 8. Hopefully, you've all been contacted about your areas. I'll be taking care of District 5 neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. I'll be visiting District 5 neighborhoods this weekend. And again, we'll be having our visioning exercise for the Gateway area Friday, October 26th, from starting at 8 a.m. And also in your calendars in November, on Saturday, November 3rd, we did a City Hall Mall at Fiesta Mall, maybe 6-7 months ago. We're doing another one now, this one at Superstition Springs. Good. On November 3rd. We'll be out at Superstition Springs in one of the courtyards with city staff and booths and activities and information. Yeah, I don't have the date. Usually we're there kind of the hours of the mall, so that would make sense starting at 10. But I'll get the time. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Do we have any requests to speak this morning?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Study session is adjourned.